And welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Bree.
I'm Theora.
And I'm Caitlin.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters, and we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, queers! What's on the Big Gay agenda today, Theora?
Today, we're talking about Caitlin's favorite show, High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Woo!
Woo! No,
I have a second intro that I have been preparing. Okay, ready?
I'm ready.
First, there was the iconic High School Musical trilogy. And then, there was High School Musical, the musical, which is actually called On Stage, I believe. And it's like the musical Broadway version. I don't even think it was on Broadway. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Now, we have High School Musical, the series. Now, we aren't going to be able to cover everything that happens in the show, but we will talk about some of our favorite parts and things that stood out to us, and of course, all the queerness.
Yes. So, if you haven't seen High School Musical, the series, don't worry about it. We are changing up our format a little bit, and so at the very beginning of this episode, we are going to do a non-spoiler review of the series so you can get a little taste of what it's like, how queer it is, before you want to watch it. So we'll do that, and then we will jump into all of the spoilers. But don't worry, we'll let you know when we get there in case you want to like turn this off and go watch it.
Which you should.
Which you should. It is something that is still streaming on Disney Plus.
Yes, that is unfortunately true. I have references to things that are no longer streaming in here as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so before we get into all the queerness, let's go through some housekeeping, as Theora likes to call it, apparently. Anyway, so please subscribe to all the things. YouTube, social media, subscribe, leave a review on please, whatever platform you are listening on, if you're able to, leave a comment down below. We will have a secret word at the end if you make it through the whole thing that you can try to spell without looking it up. It's fun. Do it.
Super fun.
Like this video, share it. Just click the share button. I don't think you actually have to share it. Just click it.
If you're listening to this on Apple, please download the episode because that's what helps us get into the analytics. And we're trying our very best to reach a wider audience. So please help us out with that. And also, if you can leave a review on Apple, that would also be really, really helpful. It can just be Caitlin's spelling word at the end. It doesn't have to be a big paragraph or something intimidating. Just please, please, please. And 5 stars, that would be really helpful as well.
Yes, because we want to keep spreading the queer content for the world.
Correct.
If you want early access to our episodes and bonus content, like exclusive episodes where we discuss current queer content we are consuming, it's called Keeping Up with Big Gay Energy, become a Patreon member. And if you want merch, visit our store at biggayenergypod.com. You can find us on all things at Big Gay Energy Pod. Try to make it really easy for everyone.
Yes, that's the only way to complete the Big Gay agenda, by making it easy.
And super gay.
Queer. And super gay.
Yeah. Okay, so now let's get into what this show is about. So this section has been blank for most of the time because I could not figure out how to explain this show. So we're going to go with the description of the first season because you have to go season by season because it gets confusing. So the series, set as the real-life East High, where the original movie was filmed, follows a group of students as they count down to opening night of their school's first-ever production of High School Musical. With meta-references and some docu-style elements, it's a modern take on the classic from 15 years ago.
Yeah, I would like to add that it's 4 seasons total, and I'm going to synopsis the 4 seasons extremely quickly. Season 1, the theater kids all meet each other and become friends. Season 2, the theater kids are performing against a rival theater group. I don't know why there's balloons. Season 3, 2 weeks at summer camp. Season 4, some people are graduating. That's basically the whole show.
Okay, that's the more simple way of putting it. Also, if you're listening, when Theora was talking about season two, there was random balloons that popped up on her camera. So that's why she said, I don't know why there's balloons.
Yeah, it's not really important. But yeah, that's basically the entire show. And yeah, it's like a mockumentary style filming, like The Office. It's something The Office made really popular. Only unlike The Office, it's never explained why they're doing this as a mockumentary style. There's like a fourth wall break at some point where they're like, who the fuck are you guys? But like, it's never actually explained. And then it gets confusing in season three where there's actually a documentary happening outside of the mockumentary. So like, it gets wild. So yeah, if you're gonna watch this and dive into it, Caitlin's advice is totally on point. Watch it season by season. And because it builds in, like, the insanity of, like, the filming style.
I told you,
style.
You don't start in the middle. You have to start at the beginning. It all adds. But they do talk about how crazy it is, like, with the multiple different productions going on in season three.
Yeah, it's confusing. But if you were to just jump in.
Anyway, if you've been here for a while, you know about our Hydrate for Lesbian Jesus scale at the end. We have a new scale for the beginning before we start with spoilers, and that's the Big Gay Energy scale of how queer something actually is.
Now, yes. It is a super scientific scale developed by the Big Gay Energy team. It's proprietary, using gay science. Basically, what we're going to do is essentially give you our rating of how valuable this piece of media is in the queer lexicon of media, as we like kind of cover everything. So it'll be a scale of 1 to 10, like the hydration scale, but kind of give you an upfront idea of like, what am I getting myself into for this piece of queer media? If you haven't watched it yet and maybe are leaning towards it. Hydration scale will be at the very, very end, like in our last episode when we cover this. So like, don't worry, lesbian Jesus will be worshipped at the end.
And as always, our scales are subjective to each member of Big Gay Energy, I believe.
But this one number? Is this one's highly scientific. So
this one's scientific.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We
how
have scientific it, that we're all different. Do you have a number, or are we just doing my number?
No, we're each doing it.
Okay, I'm just wondering. That's it's not subjective. It's scientific.
Yeah,
but each host has their own number.
Listen, we've all done our own research. And then we're going to come to our conclusion of our experiment for the Big Gay Energy scale. So, Caitlin, how much Big Gay Energy does High School Musical, the musical, the series have, based on your gay science?
Okay, so I'll give you a little background with my science, but just to be upfront, my
I have to give you my credentials.
I decided to give it a 7. And that's because the first season is quite straight. And a little boring, but we'll get into that later. But it does get gayer, queerer as it goes, to where, like, most of the cast is queer by the end, I feel like. So that's something.
That is something.
Especially for Disney.
Yeah. So, okay, based on my initial study, I was going to give this a 5 as the Big Gay Energy scale, but I have since changed to a 6, and my results of my experiment basically are that, yes, there's queer characters in the show from start to finish, including, like, queer parents. Like, one of the characters has a set of queer parents, and everything about it is normalized, which I think is important in terms of, like, when looking at quality queer media. Most of my issues with the show are the fact that it's a Disney production. And we'll get into that. But overall, I think it's positive portrayal of queer people. They do avoid a lot of stereotypes, which I think is a good thing. And what made me really, like, up the scale a little bit is that, taking my bias out of it, I think that this is a good piece of media for a younger audience. Like, it doesn't totally vibe with me as a millennial who's, like, I grew up with the High School Musical movies when I was in high school versus, like, this kind of thing. So, like, it doesn't totally vibe with me, but I think that it's an important piece of queer media for, like, young people to have that, like, deals with issues aside from, like, coming out. Like, there's some coming out, but it's, like, not a main focus. There's no, like, drama that's I don't know. I feel like it's positive portrayals in a variety of different sets of queerness. I think there is room for improvement. Like, there's not a lot of, like, non-binary characters. There's no trans rep. So there's, like, some holes. But overall, I think it's done pretty well in terms of, like, the queerness of it. And it is throughout, from start to finish. So I would give it a 6.
Great. I'm glad that is over 5. So you kind of answered this, but so since there is like a age gap between each of the hosts, and so I wasn't sure what this answer would be. So my question for you, Theor, is have you ever seen the High School Musical movies?
And Caitlin, for that I would say I am a millennial. Of course I've seen the High School Musical movies. Like, that was part of being a millennial. Do I remember them? No. I remember, like, 2 Gabrielle and Troy songs, and that's about it. And the fact that Troy had a lesbian haircut is iconic. So that's about all I remember. And I remember memes on Tumblr that still exist today of, like, it's gonna be a Wildcat summer. Every summer that happens. So that's about all I remember.
I wasn't sure if it was, like, I guess it would be high school movies since it's set in a high school. But I was in 4th grade when I found out about High School Musical because people were appalled that I didn't know it. So I had to watch that and Hannah Montana and, like, you know, actually assimilate, is that the word, into the culture in my 4th grade class. So that's how little I was watching this stuff. But I did watch it, the movies again, for this episode as well. I'm very dedicated to this episode.
Absolutely, and that's why we're here.
Okay, so now we're just going to talk a little bit. Well, I'm going to, because I love this show, I will tell you. The first thing I said about this is that it's not just about singing and dancing, although I do love these aspects. It's not a show where, like, they burst in the song and, like, don't realize they're singing. Like, the songs actually have a point. But it reminds me of my childhood. Like, the nostalgia definitely helps the show get off the ground because it's very, very slow in the beginning. Like, it took me... I stopped after the first few episodes, and a friend had to tell me what happens in season 3 to get me to actually watch it, and I'm very glad for her to tell me that. So I found it relatable because, like, our high school participated in a theater competition like they do in season 2, but ours was, like, peer-reviewed and voted on rather than the organization choosing winners. But it also heals my inner child because a lot of people in the show are not afraid to be themselves, and you just see them find who they are, and I just really wish I was who I am now back then. Because, like, I'm so comfortable with myself, and that's because of this podcast and the people I've met along the way. And I feel like I could have done so much more in high school. But does anyone know who they actually are in high school? Because I feel like we change every single year. But I do... go ahead.
When you're an adult, you still don't know who you are. Like,
yeah, we're changing.
It's a myth that you know who you are ever. Like, you just don't. The only thing you can, like, rely on is that shit's gonna change. Which, I like, was a theme at the very end of the show, and I was like, yes, that's real life coming from a Disney show when, like, there's so many elements of this where I'm like, this is unrealistic and it's driving me crazy. But, like, that message at the end, I was like, yes, that's the most real thing that has happened on this show.
I feel like season 4 is the most real out of
them. They just said, fuck it, we're done. Let's drop truth bombs. Like,
and curse words. They bleep a lot of shit.
I mean, they bleep it. Leave it in. Who cares? Go for that PG rating or whatever. Anyway.
Okay, but I feel like I was a lot like Ashlyn in season 1 in high school because I went to school with my cousin, technically 2 of them, but that's a whole nother story. I only met the one once, who was a year older and popular because everyone wanted her relationship with her boyfriend. And I was just brought along everywhere, there for her and not really seen. But once I got into theater and dance more, my confidence began to grow and I found more people like me. So I just... that brings me to my next note. I have a strong bias towards Ashlyn and Maddox, just to be upfront about it. I didn't hear what you just said.
I said, who would have guessed?
who would have thought? If you didn't get that by the end of this whole show. Yeah. Okay.
But this is the spoiler-free section, so we'll move past that.
Yes. So do you have anything to say about it?
This is not a show I would have watched independently. Nothing against the show. It's just that my high school theater drama show was Glee, and I was traumatized by it and would not have watched anything in the genre because that was quite enough. Go listen to our Glee episodes if you want to unpack the trauma, but yeah, I was over it.
And to be fair, I was traumatized as an adult. That
right.
So like, go listen to that.
Enough. I do enjoy shows about theater. Like, I have all the honor and respect for people who do theater in high school, whatever. So, like, Caitlin, you're my hero for, like, doing it. It's something I always wanted to do but never had the confidence to actually do or time because I was playing sports like crazy. I wore my high school lacrosse shirt today because I don't have a theater getup like Caitlin does.
I literally had this in my closet. And I'm like, I'm never going to wear this again. So, like, this is the best time to do it.
It is. There's never a bad time. But, yeah, I enjoy it, but, like, for me, there's other shows I like better. Like, for all its bullshit, I like Glee. Because Glee is not trying to be, I don't know, Glee is just, it's a satire. It's not trying to, like, teach you life lessons. It's just a mess. And that's, I understand that, and that's fine, and I find it entertaining. This had too much Disney shit in it, where I was just like, why? It's just, like, the drama in it felt very fake. In a lot of, not always, but a lot of the relationship drama was just, like, this is forced. It's, like, the MacGuffin. It's, like, we need to have, like, drama here to move the plot. And I'm, like, why? And it just feels very, like, out of nowhere and forced. And I can't stand it. And then any of the drama is just, like, wholesome at the end. And I'm, like, what are you, it's, like, it's just, it felt very fake to me in a lot of aspects. So, which takes me as the viewer out of the show versus, like, Glee is just a mess and it feels more realistic of being a mess. But it's, like, it's not trying to be wholesome. It's, like, this is just life and this is drama and drama is messy. It's not wrapped up with a cute bow at the end. So, I wouldn't have made it past the first season either, only because, like, so know that going into it. Because the first season for me is very, it's, like, trying to be Glee, but it's trying to be wholesome Glee. So, like, everybody is, like, a caricature.
Mm-hmm.
And I have actual issues with some of the characters who are portrayed as a caricature at the beginning. Like, shame on you writers. But, yeah, once you get past it, like, season two, again, it's still trying to be Glee, but it's, like, it's starting to come into its own as a show more. And then by season three and season four, it's its own thing. So, like, personally, like, I would have just watched 3 and 4 and, like, skipped 1 and 2 because they just feel too much like they're, like, wholesome Glee, which I don't want that.
I did not let Theor do that. I was like, no.
No, I watched all of it to talk about it. But, like, 3 and 4, I think, were much stronger seasons because it becomes its own show at that point. But I will say the Disney plugging itself constantly drove me crazy, and at some point I felt like I was watching a Disney advertisement, and I hate that. Which
was that season 3?
It's 3 and beyond. It's 3 and beyond keeps doing it, and it's really annoying. And so it just, I don't blame the writers. I feel like that's Disney corporate shit, because the point of this show is like the premise of it is to hearken nostalgia back to the High School Musical movies, which will grab the millennials who loved the movies. And then setting it in it with Gen Z characters will pull Gen Z in. So I understand what they're trying to do, but it was like heavy-handed marketing at some point. And I was like, this is really fucking annoying.
I think they were just trying to play too much into the meta-ness, maybe, which is why they kept saying it.
No, I think it's Disney plugging itself. This is like corporate shit. And it felt really annoying after a while. I was like, please stop fucking saying Disney Plus every 5 seconds. Like, I understand Frozen is on Disney Plus. I get it. Like, it's marketing is what it is. And it was annoying. But it's not the writer's fault. It's nothing against the show. I feel like that's a Disney corporate thing. And I really don't like Disney because they're taking over the entertainment industry, and I hate that. So it felt very heavy-handed, and I did not like that. But with that being said, I thought the characters were very good. Everything is just wholesome and wrapped up with a nice bow because it's Disney, which I don't really love. I like messy characters because that's more real life. But I think for teaching life lessons to kids, this show is more geared towards that, and it's upfront about that. So, like, moving my bias from it, I think there's value to watching this show, especially for, like, way younger, like, Gen Alpha watching this. I think it would be valuable, because it does handle real issues and, like, kind of break it down. And they do a lot of, like, the characters do a lot of emotional talking, even the male characters, which I think is really important. So there are aspects of it that I think is really well done. It's just the Disney stuff drives me crazy.
That's fair. And to give more context for, like, why I love this show, I'm the type of person who, like, will go back and watch shows from my childhood or, like, even current stuff, just, like, mindless while I'm, like, on my phone or something, just so, like, I'm not watching drama and being Grey's depressed Anatomy. All the time. Yes! That's what I was thinking, but I was trying not to bring it up again.
Yes. Grey's.
If I watch too much of that at once, I will get depressed, so... Then you just turn on shows. I wouldn't even just say this. I would be like more of the shows that are just like, you know, the slapstick comedy that is just like way too much. But they're good to watch when you're bored. Okay, so I think now we should get into like talking about the characters. So, I mean, you could stay for the intro to the characters because they're only in, I only put the season one descriptions up, but I would just go watch the show now. I mean, if you really want to take Theora's advice and start at 3. But I would just get through the whole thing because I do think it's worth it.
Yeah, so we are basically entering spoiler territory at this point. This is your warning. So if you haven't watched it, turn this off, go watch it, then come back. If you're a spoiler hoe and you don't care, we don't slut shame on this podcast, so keep listening. We're about to get into all of the spoilers. Enjoy.
Yeah, so we're going to just do a quick description of the season one characters right now. So Nini, played by Olivia Rodrigo, who I actually do not think of when I think of High School Musical, because I forget she's in it sometimes. But she is the lead character who the world revolves around in season one, forever stuck in a love triangle.
My description of Nini. She's Rachel Berry if Rachel Berry took Xanax. That is okay. Who this character is.
I love that you have your own description. Okay, cool. All right. Next, we have Courtney, played by Dara Renee. And I'm putting the actors' names in it, too, because I have a section later with fun facts, and I use their real name, so just to give a sense of it. So Courtney is Nini's best friend who loves fashion. I want to say more, but they don't give her much more in the first season.
Courtney is the character I have the most problems with in the first season because they made her the stereotype sassy black woman, and that was it, and that's racist, and that fucking pissed me the fuck off. Like, that was her whole personality in season one. She becomes her own character later and is, like, really fucking smart and, like, on her way to Ivy League schools and shit, but, like, in the first season, she's the sassy black woman, and that fucking pissed me off.
Yeah.
Who was there to just elevate Nini, and that was it. Like, it's fucked up.
Agreed. We have a whole section on it. Don't worry.
That is my rant on that.
Next, we have EJ, played by Matt Cornett, the star jock who is dating Nini at the start of the show and is really threatened by Ricky. He can be very insecure and he's used to being loved by all.
Yeah, basically, he's like, I don't know. He's just toxic as fuck in the beginning and then becomes way too nice. It was like, he's like polar opposites by the end. And I'm like, what is this?
They
like
everybody is polar opposites.
No, it's like, well, they started off with Glee caricatures. They were trying to be Glee, mm-hmm. and then became way too wholesome at the end. And I'm like, is this character gross, or did they just go through a Disney transformation? Like, it's very annoying. He's a great example of that.
Yeah, they did have some of his personal life things, though, that, like, kind of helped.
To justify this, but no. It's weird.
Okay, next we have Ricky, played by Joshua Bassett, Nini's best friend since kindergarten. Oh my god, I can't talk.
Kindergarten.
He is part of the love triangle with Nini and EJ. And then...
Oh, go ahead.
And then EJ and Gina.
Listen, you could also... Okay, you could break down the show by what musical they're doing or by who Ricky is chasing as a girlfriend, because he's the lead male who always needs to be in a relationship with a woman, so that is also his personality, is always chasing a girl. I refer to him as knockoff Troy Bolton, though, because that's all he is, really.
I first broke this thing, this whole show down into relationships, because the relationships are so heavy in this show. Like, that's basically what it revolves around, and that's why I like the storylines that aren't based on them. I mean, except one that we'll get into later, but I already told you my bias. So, yeah, but I was just like, talking about different things in each season would have been too confusing if we didn't break it down by season instead. So next we have Carlos, played by Frankie Rodriguez. He is unapologetically himself and stays true to him even if it doesn't get him many friends, and this is especially true in season one. He becomes the student choreography and finds his people and boyfriend in the drama club.
I love him. That's it.
He's great. Next we have Seb, or Sebastian, played by Joe Serafini. And this is the first character I wrote the description for, and this is all I could think of. A gay farm boy who just wants to play Sharpay.
Seb is the best boy. And the writers do him dirty in later seasons.
Yes.
But he is the best boy.
And next, we have Ashlyn, played by Julia Lester. Tony nominated Julia Lester. Okay, EJ's, the description that I had to unfortunately write for her. EJ's cousin, who doesn't have a lot of confidence in the beginning, but gains it once she isn't being used as a plot device for EJ. A good songwriter.
Yeah, that tracks. This character is good from start to finish, but again, like Courtney, is just a MacGuffin. Like, is somebody for one of the leads to have conversations with and not a real person.
Yeah, it's quite annoying. That's why I said that I relate to her, because, like, she's just there for her cousin in the beginning, and it's just, there's so much more to her. Now we go to Gina, played by Sophia Wiley. She is the new girl with an attitude who is out for blood after not getting the lead in the musical. She will stop at nothing to get Nini out of the show and is a fantastic dancer.
Gina is the love child of Santana and Brittany. Let me explain. Let me explain. Season one, she is Santana Lopez. Like, would cut a bitch to get the lead. That is season one Gina. Then, by the end, she's Brittany, because she's oblivious to social cues, has the biggest heart on the planet. That is who that character is, basically. She is Santana, and then turns into Brittany.
Okay, I love your description of her. Lastly, for the initial character descriptions, we have Big Red, played by Larry Saperstein. He is Ricky's best friend and biggest supporter. He is always there for him when he needs someone to talk to. Also a great tapper. So he's basically Ricky's character pawn.
I love Big Red also. He's pretty consistent, honestly, as a person from start to finish.
Again, we'll get into the last season thing that happened, which is a little weird and odd, but anyway.
Yeah. Writers did him dirty, like Seb, but I like his character overall. Like, he doesn't feel, like, he has, like, a big heart and stuff, but doesn't feel like he went through a Disney transformation and, like, suddenly has a good heart. Like, he always had one from the beginning.
He was always super supportive and...
Correct. He's, like, the ideal best good friend, guy. Basically.
He's a good guy.
He's the second best boy. Seb is the best boy.
Seb is the best. Okay.
Seb is the best boy.
So... let's get into season one. And I mean, yeah, we've all both mentioned that season one is not our favorite. I don't think Theora likes it one bit. But there we have some positive and negative things to say. But just keep going with us, because we have to talk about it all. So we have the first instance of queerness in the very first episode, very early on. And it's just casually mentioned that Nini has two moms. And... yes. I love that it's never a big deal and it's just normal. And, like, they don't be like, oh my god, you have two moms? Like, I feel like they could have done that and made it a big thing, but, like, it's normal. And I love that, because we've never seen... Actually, Good Luck Charlie, I think, had a queer set of parents. But this one's, like, the lead's parents.
Yeah, so to have that in a Disney show be normalized, I think is a positive thing.
Yeah.
Period.
And then Nini does meet her sperm donor in season 3. Yeah.
I skipped her. After a while, I was so annoyed with her, I would just skip her anytime she was on screen. I skipped this whole plot line.
And I have to say it's very fair because it took me to, like, I've watched this 4 times in the past, like, 2 months, 3 months. And I've just started liking Nini. And poor Olivia, this is her second Disney show. The first show made me not like her at all because that show is so crazy and weird and stupid. Sorry if you like it. I mean, I don't know. Like, you like what you like. Like, I like this show. This isn't Theora's cup of tea. Whatever. But when she meets him, they just portray it like he's getting to meet her. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm now your parent too, or like, I want you to be in my life. Like, they just make it a normal thing, and she gets to just talk to him and decide how much she wants to see him and stuff, which I like. Okay, so I was grabbing for the queerness in this season. So we're going to jump to Seb and Carlos.
Yes.
At homecoming.
I love them.
Yeah, they're I mean, of course, they're the our only really queerness in this season. And I don't know, I feel like homecoming,
well, they're the only queer couple.
Yeah.
In this season. Like you just mentioned, there's other queerness, yeah, but they're the only queer romance in the first season. Put it that way.
Okay.
But they are very cute.
Yes, they are. But I don't think that this episode was that cute. But it is, like, the gayest thing we get so far. Just because, I mean, like, Seb doesn't show up till the very end of Homecoming. And Carlos is sitting there very sad because he's not there and hasn't texted him. But when Seb finally shows up, that is a very cute moment, though, because Ashlyn's like, I see someone who makes you happy. That's actually the season 3 scene, not the scene. They see him across the auditorium and after they're done dancing. And so Seb, they hug. I'm not explaining this well. Hold on. But Seb does explain to Carlos that they lost one of the cows, which is why he couldn't show up earlier, which is fair. And they didn't have cell reception in the barn. And then they slow dance and everything is happy.
Okay, but like the whole thing is cute because like Carlo at the beginning. So this is the homecoming episode. I honestly like this episode because of the two of them. Because in the beginning, when Carlos asks out Seb, it's also very cute. Just the asking him out part is really cute. And then, like, of course he thinks he stood him up because Disney manufactures relationship drama. Like, all the drama in the show is just relationship-based, which is just MacGuffins. It's just like, oh no, we have to have tension. But at the end, it's happy, like you said, which is what drives me nuts about this show. It's always like, oh yay! So, like, for me, all the drama in the show is so low stakes, I can't even get invested in it because I'm like, it's Disney. I know they're going to make it happy at the end. So it doesn't actually mean anything when you're watching it because it's like going to be happily resolved like this. The other part about this I like. So while like the quote drama is happening where Carlos is like, oh, am I going to get stood up? Like, is he ashamed to come out with me? Blah, blah, blah. There comes a part where he's like, I still want to dance. So he gets encouraged to kind of like go on the dance floor and he's kind of like dancing by himself. And then Ashlyn sees him and she's like, I'm going to dance with you. You shouldn't have to dance alone. And like Seb eventually shows up, but I like that part too, because the bigger theme about this show is the friendships you make that last a lifetime. And so I like that point as well, because I think that's more important than the romantic relationships, because if this show teaches you anything, romantic relationships come and go, but like your friend group is more important really at the end of the day, because they're there for you when the relationship inevitably blows up. So I thought that was even more important to this episode. And like we find out later, like Ashlyn is also queer. So at this point, she doesn't know. So it's like queer solidarity too when you like put it all together. So I thought that was really sweet. And I love that part of this.
I do love that Carlos had the confidence enough to like, you know what? I'm just going to go out there and dance myself and have fun.
Yeah, totally. It is his prom. And I'm like, yeah, glad he did that. And like, again, there's no asexual rep in this because it's Disney. They would never do that. But I think it's important to show the power of non-romantic, like, bonds, which is what this shows. It's like, we can have a good time platonically together. It doesn't have to be romantic to enjoy your prom. So I like that aspect.
And then also, it's Courtney's song that she's singing throughout the whole thing. And she kills it. It's called Born to Be Brave. And it's basically played in every single season. Because it just because they're all born to be brave.
Nice.
Okay, so another theme that I saw throughout the whole show is be yourself. I've talked a little bit about it already, but in the Thanksgiving episode, it's very apparent. And with Carlos, I felt for Carlos in the Thanksgiving episode because he brings this huge board game that he made from the High School Musical movies. And he was so worried his friends would judge him. And they were just so excited to see this board game. And if you look at the screenshots of the board game, they're the different tiles. One of them is caught smoking on the roof, go to the principal's office. Another one is Brainiacs 1, go to, I thought that said detention, go to Decathlon, something for party.
So, the whole game is just, so well thought out, and it's just, very complicated. And there's four different categories that they play, that you can play, and one of them is called Looking for Glee. So, I mean, they're literally naming the show that they're trying to be, but Carlos talks about how much that he loved that show, and EJ's like, it still holds up. I'm like, yes, but I mean, the jokes are pretty, but whatever, that doesn't matter right now. But the response from Carlos, he says, oh, yay, I thought you guys were going to judge me. And it's just so cute that everyone was supporting him, and he just felt like, I found my people finally. Because we see in a later season that he was getting bullied right before the show started. And that's why Miss Jen took him under her wing, basically, and made him the choreographer in her second hand. And so as I was thinking about this for this section, something ain't mathing here.
Uh-oh.
It was also mentioned that Carlos had this game for 10 years. So he made it 10 years ago. He is 15 in season one, which means he was 5 years old when he made this board game that's completely elaborate. And was watching Glee.
Which is not good for your development.
No!
But that explains his, character when he starts. He's trying to emulate Glee.
What character do you think is five-year-old Carlos's favorite?
Five-year-old Carlos? Probably Kurt. Or Rachel Berry, honestly.
I didn't even think of Kurt.
Maybe Brittany, because of the dancing.
But I was thinking, either Rachel, just because she wants to be on Broadway and he has a few lines. Cause Mr. Mazzara says in one of the scenes, don't you have somewhere you need to be? And he just says Broadway.
And but that's Kurt too. So
yeah,
so I think that either makes sense. And Carlos isn't as toxic of a human being as Rachel Berry, because who is? So I think that he's more Kurt, cause Kurt is more of a friend to people and
yeah,
not as horrible. But so I think he's more.
I feel
Kurt.
Like 5-year-old Carlos would also like Sue, for some reason. I just feel like.
I feel like 5-year-old Carlos would like Kristen Chenoweth when she shows up, because because she's basically Miss Jen. So yeah. There's also that, because that's who that character is obviously based off of.
Okay, well, you brought that up. They did play the same character.
I know.
Okay, well,
I know sure. That. Kristen Chenoweth is the original Glinda from Wicked. It is the same character. That's what I mean. The show in the first season is very much just Glee 2.0, but nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to mention something, unless you have more about Carlos, there's something I want to mention in the things we like section, since that's what I think where we're at. It's not queer, but I like and dislike it at the same time, but because we're on the Glee compare. I literally, my frame of reference for this particular show is just Glee, because it's high school theater, basically. So I think they're very comparable, and I think that's what it's supposed to be in the first season anyway. So one thing I want to mention that I liked that was different is one of the tension points kind of throughout the show, but very much in the first season, is like robot club versus drama club. And so you have the two teachers kind of like being snarky with each other. And at some point, the robot club teacher tries to sabotage the theater teacher. And all of this, again, just drama for drama's sake. And so if you look at it, like, on the surface, this drama is very much like teacher v. teacher, club v. club. And it's supposed to mirror Glee. Because in Glee, the tension was the cheerleaders versus the Glee Club or the Drama Club in this instance. But what I like about this version of that drama is it's basically like outcast group versus outcast group, essentially. Versus Glee, the classic like high school drama is usually like the top of the food chain popular group versus the bottom of the food chain. So there's a lot more bullying and shit that happens because of the hierarchy of high school, quote unquote. And so that made it very unbalanced and fucked up what happens in Glee, like real life. But here they're more like on the same level, which is an interesting twist on that, but it's also kind of sad because it's like two minority groups fighting each other for pennies, basically, to keep their clubs going while the football team / Cheerios are swimming in pools of $100 bills, if that makes any sense. So I thought that was an interesting twist on like high school interdynamics. And like, it's sad that like those teachers are pitted against each other because really at the end of the day, they're both trying to like support their outcast kid groups. But I like that twist on like traditional high school shows and high school drama. I did like that.
I feel like it was very much one-sided though. Like Mr. Mazar was always trying to get rid of Miss Jen, but Miss Jen was just trying to like, I mean, eventually she was just like, I don't really care about robotics. I mean, she does try to help him in the Thanksgiving episode in the beginning. And then he's like reluctantly helping her.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah, when you like break it all down. But like to have that be like the, because usually in a high school show like this, there's like one group against the other group. And it's usually a popular group versus an unpopular group. Here, I like that it's two unpopular groups. And that's a tension point. Yeah. So, like, there is no instance in the show of, like, the football team making fun of the drama kids, which happens in every fucking show in high school, basically, about this. So I like that they removed that element, and it's just people on the same level, and that's kind of, like, a drama point. It's not a main focus, but I like that that twist was interesting to me.
Yeah. Also, we have the same thing from Glee. Like, Ashlyn is also in Robotics Club, so we have the crossover, too, as well. One of the things that I loved, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, is that they were open to gender-bending the roles in High School Musical. So, little Seb wanted to play Sharpay really bad, and Miss Jen originally thinks that he wants to audition for Ryan, because that is what we're used to. And Carlos mentions that he thinks he'd rather play Sharpay. And Miss Jen just like loves it immediately and was like, okay, let's do it. And so Seb gets the role and he kills it. His outfit for Sharpay is just amazing. It's like metallic pants, this blazer, and he has this face makeup that's like this, I don't know if it's a lightning bolt or whatever, but it's like a pink streak on the side of his face.
Like David Bowie.
Okay, that's a good. So David Bowie meets Sharpay. It's great.
He's also queer, so that works. Yeah. So yeah, I do like that aspect as well. And Seb is just the best boy, so I'm glad he got to be happy in his role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing that I really like about the show that I thought was a funny ongoing thing is that they kept, an ongoing joke is that they kept referring to High School Musical as a period piece. And I thought that was hilarious because I do that in real life too. And I'm like, oh, is it set in the 90s? It's a period piece. So
I mean, like technically it is. Joke. Like we don't use the same phones anymore.
No, yes, but like in back in my day, like a period piece was like black and white movies mm-hmm. versus like this is something that happened like High School Musical happened like 10 years ago. It's not that much out of the realm of like you know. So I just thought that was funny, like hyperbole, and they kept doing shit like, "Oh, that movie, it's like I don't know, like basically it's basically making fun of millennials and calling us old is what it is." When it's like shit that happened 10 years ago, basically.
Yeah.
So, ongoing joke to make fun of millennials, basically. But I thought it was funny and a little annoying because then I feel old. And I'm like, should I be watching this show?
It is weird to think that 20 years ago was not the 90s.
Yeah, my brain is not wired for that.
Anything else you like before we get to the dislike section of this season?
Let's see. Nope.
Okay, sounds great. All right, so...
Well, you covered most things, so, like, I don't have a lot of notes outside of, like, you basically covered everything in your notes, so I have, like, little comments.
That's how I feel when you do the, I'm like, she wrote everything. What am I going to say? But yeah, I've been working on this for 2 months. I have been making sure that I am fully prepared for this show. Not that like I'm always make sure that I'm prepared, but like this has been my focus.
Okay. It's been Caitlin's passion project, basically. So I'm excited we're finally getting to hear all of your thoughts and feelings about it, because that's what this show is all about.
Yeah.
Not High School Musical, but, like, our podcast.
Yes, because we get to geek out together, and it's the best part of the week.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first dislike is my biggest dislike of everything. Like, nor any show. The love triangles. Can we please get rid of them? Like, so we have Ricky, Nene, and EJ. Then we have Ricky, Gina, and EJ. Like, we don't even, like, branch out of the love triangles. Like, it's the same people, just a different girl.
Yeah, it's always Ricky, girl, or girl and guy, or girl and girl. Because then later there's this weird thing that lasts a minute with, like, the rival drama girl from the other school that lasts literally two episodes. Yeah. And it's just like, why? It's just like, Ricky is the character that can't be single or not have a love interest. It's like... He's the compat guy, and it's really annoying. And like I've said already, like, this show operates on manufactured relationship drama, and I hate shows that do that because there's no point to it at the end of the day. It's just to have relationship drama. Yeah, basically. So, like, no care. So if you get a couple on this show, it's not likely they're going to be happy together. First of all, they're in high school, so that's not realistic to begin with. But the show is constantly trying to, like, start relationship drama. And I hate how they start the relationship dramas. Because, like, with Nene and Ricky, it's just, like, I guess that's in season two. But, like, the drama is dumb. Like, I don't know. It just feels very fake. Because they're trying to, like, push it.
Nene and Ricky's in the beginning is that Nene tells Ricky that she loves him through a song that she posts on Instagram.
It's so stupid. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then gets Ricky's mad, like, when he doesn't say it back. I'm like, well, what is this?
And who Ricky cares? Like, breaks up with her because she's going away for a month. Or they were on a break or something like that. Like Ross and Rachel.
Listen. The thing I have a bigger problem with in the show than the love drama is that these children don't understand time. Like, it's like everybody's operating on lesbian time in the show, okay? Because they're like, you're gonna be gone for a month, that's literally forever. And it's like, no, it's not. And this bitch is coming right back to school, and you're gonna see her every day. Why are we freaking out about this? Later in season three, the whole thing is they're like, wow, the summer's ruined. And it's like, you're on a 2-week camp trip.
Yeah, also, I don't know why Nene was gone for a month, yet the camp's only 2 weeks.
I don't know. I didn't watch her plotline at all. I don't know. Like, time doesn't make sense. Like, because the whole drama in season three is, like, I can't believe the summer's ending. And it's like, you're at camp for 2 weeks. Summer's 3 months. Like, why is this? They're like, if this 2-week period can't work for our relationship, that means we're doomed. I'm like, it's fucking 2 weeks. This isn't real life. like, what, these kids have no concept of time, which, like, maybe that is a teenager thing. Like, you really just don't, because you don't have, I mean, your life outside of school. School is very, like, regimented. It's like, you have this many weeks, and then the semester ends, and this many weeks, and then the semester ends, and then this many weeks for summer, and it's, like, this constant pattern. But, like, the kids have no concept of time, and it's ridiculous. And it's just, they use that, the writers use that to create drama, and they're like, it's ending, and it's like, it's a week. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, what the fuck? It's so weird and annoying, and I'm like, she's gonna be right back. Yeah, like,
what the hell can they do the rest of the summer?
Who cares? It's so stupid. But that's what I'm saying, where, like, the stakes in the show are just non-existent to me, the viewer, and I'm like, what am I watching? You're trying to make me, like, care about this plot that is just nuts.
Also, they didn't write the characters well. Like, they're just so annoying.
No, like, yeah, big dislike. I know you're gonna get into one character in particular, but the character development in season one in particular is just, feels, everybody feels forced, because every single person starts off as a toxic caricature who's very one-dimensional, who's based off of a Glee character, and all of them are toxic. So, like, to me, the beginning, the show is just toxic as fuck. It's, like, the energy while trying to wrap a bow on it and make it wholesome. Like, Miss Jen is, like, Sue, but loves drama, and it's just, like, the drama department. So she's, like, very high. Everybody's hyper-competitive and toxic. Like, Gina's super toxic, and I'm like, what am I watching? I feel like I'm watching wholesome Glee, and if I'm gonna watch Glee, I want it to be Glee and be funny and shit, and I'm like, this is weird. Anyway, but all of the characters, I have a problem with season one, period. It's just weird.
My solution for the love triangles is that they make the crack ships that people have a reality, and put EJ and Ricky together, and Gina and Nini together. Because one, would be more queer, and two, let's be real, like, the triangles are going that way. Like, maybe EJ and Ricky just like each other, and that's why they keep going after the same girl.
Yeah, maybe. Ricky does drive all the way to see EJ in college later, so, I mean, that tracks.
Yeah, they have some great conversations. If they would just stop using the word brother together.
Yeah. We don't need
they're overcompensating.
Bro.
I want an episode where Carlos hits his head on something and creates this alternate reality where being queer is the norm and just the relationships are together, and it'd be very, very fun and gay and queer.
There is a show, there is a movie. I got like halfway through it. I don't think I finished it because I don't remember. But there is a movie called Were the World Mine, where this guy has basically the power to make people gay. And it is exactly this, where it's like, then being gay is normalized because everybody's gay. And yeah, it's great.
Okay, cool.
Turn this off and go watch that.
And then another love triangle that there is, that is Miss Jen, Ricky's dad.
Oh my God. No, the other thing you can mark the show, the season by, is what man is in love with Miss Jen? Because the whole show, like, she's another one who's not allowed to be single or not allowed to not have a love interest. Like, there's always men in love with her. And it's just like, what are we doing? Like, let the woman just be. Why does she need a man? She always has multiple men at every point of the show that are interested in her. She's the Ricky of the adults, basically, is what I'm saying.
I mean, it's not her fault that everybody loves her.
No, but it is the writer's fault. They keep writing the same thing over and over again.
Yes. Yeah, it does. It does turn into that again. Because you think you're out of it, and then, oh, the triangle's back.
Oh, look, here's more men. And it's like, okay, I get it. Can we move on?
They do let Nini grow a little bit. She ends up with no one. So, there's that.
She ends up leaving, which is what I wanted, because she was fucking annoying.
Okay, this is nothing against Olivia Rodrigo, but let's get into Nini's character development, which is none.
Can we also just start with Nini? I have a problem with the leads in this show. Because, again, it's very much season one is trying to be some weird crossover between Glee and High School Musical, the first movie. That's what it's trying to be. So it's like you have the toxic elements from Glee in every character, and then the wholesome shit with like High School Musical. So very much Ricky and Nini are basically knockoff Troy Bolton and Gabriella, basically, with a Glee twist. But I have a problem with the casting of the two of them, because while the show has progressive elements in it and stuff, you very much just casted two classically beautiful people who are thin into the roles of the leads. And in a show that's centered around, like, singing and shit, she is not the best singer on this show. Like, why are we casting these two people in the leads? It's just like you're conforming to stereotypes with the two of them that I have a problem with.
Yeah, the...
Period. Full stop.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard with season one because it's basically revolves around the three of them. It's supposed to be an ensemble show, but it's not really because everyone else is just a backup for these three.
Yeah, to the classically beautiful people who are all thin.
Which is why the later seasons are better.
That's what I'm saying. When it gets into its own and we get rid of Olivia Rodrigo, it gets better.
I'm sorry, Olivia. I feel bad saying that, but, like, she really was not given a chance.
That character was terrible. Like, I honestly, like, the mom's thing was cool, but other than that, Nene is the actual worst. Like, I can't stand that character at all.
I mean, they write her really whiny and annoying. And she's literally focused on boys until she starts writing more music and is like, oh, these boys mean nothing to me.
But also, like, again, like, we use, like, the people of color to, like, uphold, like, I hate that Courtney is used to prop up Olivia Rodrigo's character. I fucking hate that more than anything.
I mean,
and then all the diverse characters are there to prop up Ricky and EJ, the white guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very annoying.
It is. Also, Nene really only thinks of herself in season one.
Yes.
And
oh, yes.
And also, like, even within the three of them, when Ricky was having a hard time with his parents splitting up at home, and he was just trying to find a place to go for the night, Nene couldn't get over her own issues to see that Ricky needed to be somewhere. And she was just so wrapped up in relationship drama that she can't even see, like, the person who she used to love is, like, having issues.
The person she allegedly knows so well, because they've known each other since forever, yet you can't read that person for some reason when they're actually going through something. There's that. But then when we get to season two, and we get to, I almost called him Troy, we get to, like, when they kind of break up finally, like, their drama starts because essentially, like, Ricky starts putting his bullshit onto her. So, like, the roles reverse in season two, and, like, that's why they break up. So, again, like, those characters don't make sense for, like, what you wrote them to be. Like, because allegedly, like, they've known each other forever, and there's, like, oh, all these, like, inside jokes, and, like, I know you so well. And then, like, when we get to the crux of it in the show, it's like they don't know each other. And I'm like, what are you guys doing with these characters? It's very weird.
There's a whole book about them before the show.
It doesn't translate.
There's too much focus on them.
Yes, agreed.
Also, another thing that I really hate is it's full of jealousy. Just relationship. It's, of course, it's EJ and Ricky being jealous of each other because, you know, that goes on, like, the whole time because there's a girl involved all the time. But also, Gina is jealous of Nene. I really do not like Gina's character in the first season either because, I mean,
she's Santana, but she's not funny. Like, I'm not, I don't, like...
Oh, yeah, they don't give her comedy.
Right, she's Santana, but she's not funny. So I did not care about this. I still don't care about Gina even the whole time. Because I was just like, why do I care about this character? There's nothing entertaining about her. Like, if you're going to make her toxic, make her funny. Like, but it's not funny. It's just annoying.
See, I liked her more because I knew her as an actress going into the show. Because I watched her in another show. But I do like that she changes, and when she's nicer, she's better.
I just wish she was the lead from the beginning.
You know what? Yeah.
I would have preferred her as the lead to Olivia Rodrigo. Like, not actors, but, like, the characters. She's a better lead, and a more compelling lead to have, like, a woman come in and be set up as the lead as somebody, because she's the outsider, so to have her come in and be, like, the lead it would have been way better than just having, like, this established crap with, like, Nini and Ricky.
Yeah, have the love triangle be a background story.
Yeah, like, who cares? Like, if you're gonna make it about the play, make it about, like, Gina upsetting the, you know, the
status
social
quo.
Order of high school. Exactly. Like, that would have been a more compelling storyline. And, yeah, have her start out being toxic and then, like, she becomes basically a Disney princess by the end. Like, that's her arc. But it would have been better if she was, like, more upfront in the beginning versus just Santana that's not funny.
Yeah. I still love her. Just not... It's season one is rough, and if you're... I know we're still in the middle of this, but just keep hanging in with us. We have to get through this stuff because it's important to talk about the stuff that's not working as well as, like, what's good in a show.
And I have to ask, based off of Gina, like, is high school theater always this toxic? In terms of, like, because her whole thing in the beginning is, like, she wants to be the lead. I'll do anything it takes to be the lead. Like, it seems like they're trying to, like, also show the reality of, like, acting, because you have, like, 100 people going for the same role. So there is a cutthroat element to it. So, like, is it like this in high school theater is my question, where there's, like, 2 people going for it.
A lot of times there's more than 2. Actually. Okay. Like, so usually there's, not usually, but, like, I know of at least one instance where there's someone, like, people don't like who has too much of a big personality, and they get good roles, and then they're like, they don't work as hard. No, it's just, it can be like this, but it can also be the found family thing. So it just depends on your group, because, I mean, high school and then also, like, the summer camp theater shows and, like, regional is, like, different slightly. But yeah, there's always going to be the drama, because it's a lot of work, and then, like, you're, like, mentally exhausted after days, and then people, yeah, there's fighting, unfortunately. So, yeah, that's also a good point to bring up.
Yeah, it just seemed like it was more so a commentary on, because, like, that's what Glee was being a satire of, like, essentially, like, the toxic culture in just entertainment, because there's one role, and there's a lot of people that want that role and need that role to keep moving, so...
There's
a cutthroat element to it and a hyper-competitiveness to it that can turn toxic, basically.
You know what? I do like that, because for females, I bring this up later, is there's not a lot of female roles in shows. There's way more guy roles. And that's why you don't have to, like, that's why Ricky got the lead, because, like, you don't have to be amazing as a male to get a good role, because there's way more. So females are pitted against each other for these roles, and it's just a really sucky situation. And when you're in high school, you don't have that many opportunities to play, and especially if, like, there's somebody who, like, always gets the lead, and, like, the politics of each school will be different as well.
Totally.
And if you have the same directors each year, it's different. And I know in my school, I did summer shows at another company, and those people actually ended up coming into my school. They were their director, choreographer, and costumer. So all 3 people I worked with the summer previously were in this as well. So obviously I was okay, because I knew all these people already. But so it sucks for the people who weren't there. I mean, it's not like I got a huge role, because, one, I don't look the type of normal people, which is something else we get into later.
Yeah, which is my problem with Nini.
Yes, unfortunately, they do play into, like, the typical things happening in season one.
I hate it.
Anything about theater before I go on to the point that really pisses me off? Not really.
Let's keep going.
All right, so something that I really do not like about children's shows, and I've mentioned that I still do watch them because I want to know what's going on, is kids having to take care of the parents. Parents are always played like idiots, and that they don't know what they're doing. I mean, like, sometimes that is true, but kids shouldn't see that, like, they're the ones who should be taking care of the parents. Like, if their parents sucks, like, it's not your job to clean up after them or make sure they go to work, they get somewhere on time. And I'm tired of them portraying it like that. And
yeah, to me, it's like they're trying to like tell stories from the kids' perspective in a Disney show, which makes sense. Like, even Miss Jen is very surface level because it's from the child's perspective, all of this. So yeah, like the relationship drama with in the families, it's from the kid's perspective. So the kid feels that sense of responsibility. It feels like my parents, and they're teenagers. They're like, my parents an idiot. They don't know anything. So it's like the parents are caricatures because you're seeing it from the teenager's point of view, which pisses me off. And it makes it feel fake to me because I'm like, this is not real life. Versus like if you go watch Heartstopper, which is basically a high school show where the parents are actually adults. And, like, it's still told from the child's point of view, but it's more realistic because the adults are actually adults. They're not weird. I'm like, how does Ricky's dad pay bills? He seems so fucking stupid. Like, how does he hold a job? Like, this man seems wildly incompetent just in life. I'm like, what is this? Yeah, it's annoying. It gets into scenarios that I also hate in children's shows where the kids have too much power. Where Gina at one point's like, I'm just going to stay here and live with my friend. And I'm like, in what planet will the mom that has dragged you around the country so many times finally relinquish the well-being of her daughter to strangers? And like, where was that scene where we have to like set her up living with Ashlyn? Like, on what planet is that just like, yep, I'm staying?
I just expect that they had a scene like off camera, like, because I don't think that she was just like, I'm staying here. I think it was more
how
like,
does that go down? And then we meet her mom later and I'm like, this woman that you're portraying to me but she would never relinquish her daughter to strangers. Like, that's just out of nowhere. But again, it's like way too unrealistic where the children have too much power over the adults that this is not real life. Like, there's no way this happens without like, show me the conversation because it doesn't make sense for like the characters you've set up. Like, this is really crazy. And it's just a plot device. The parents are plot devices for the children.
I inferred more into that situation, I guess. So as someone who moved a lot growing up, I feel like maybe her mom, like, even though she's, like, very protective of Gina and, like, makes sure she wants to succeed, I think she feels really bad that she had to move Gina around a lot. And, I mean, like, you saw, like, how distraught she was when she was told that they had to leave again. So I'm thinking that maybe she's like, okay, well, if you're very happy here, let's try it.
Okay, true. But for Gina's mom, the character we've set up, it would make way more sense for her to be like, you don't want to move around a lot? Cool. Go live with your grandma. Like, why was she living with a stranger? Like, that's wild and doesn't make any sense to me. Like, Ashlyn and her family are strangers. Like, what the fuck? Like, at what planet does that happen? Where, I don't know. It just, that was crazy. And I needed a scene for me to actually believe that. Because EXO Kitty did this shit too, where they're like, the daughter has so much say over all of these like expensive decisions on a whim. And it's like, in what universe does this just happen overnight? Like, no, like, what? Children don't make the financial decisions like that for the family. Like, it's just, it gives the kids way too much power that's unrealistic. And maybe that's the point. It's like a childhood fantasy of just like, yeah, if I want to live with my friend for months, my mom will just let me. My mom that's been protective of me and dragging me across the country instead of leaving me with a stable relative who's related and reliable for her. Like, it doesn't make sense. And that drove me crazy. And it's just, mom's a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
It was annoying.
I think it would be nice to see more healthy relationships between parents and like the kids in these shows, because I think that's what kids need. It's like, what does a healthy relationship look like? What does a healthy relationship between people in relationships in high school look like? Because we obviously did not see them. But I think Courtney with her mom in this show is a really good example of this, because I think they did so well.
That is a normal relationship between a mother and a daughter. And it's like, they were friendly with each other, but mom was a mom, mom was an adult, and Courtney was a child. I think that the intention of showing like, yeah, kids can have a say is great, but you're setting unrealistic expectations for children by portraying the parents as complete dumbasses that the child can walk all over versus Courtney and her mom, who were more portrayed as a mother-daughter situation. Like the way Nick and his mom is in Heartstopper. Like, that's more realistic than most of the parent-sibling-children dynamics.
And Courtney didn't have to give her mom a pep talk, and her mom was always giving her those talks, and that's, I really love that. But I think it's a good time to mention that Courtney's mom is played by Dara's real-life mom, Kimberly Brooks. So, cute. Yeah, that's she got cute. To have her real mom on set with her, and she joined Instagram just to talk to people after the show aired. I know it's really cute. And aww, they're really close in real life as well. Like, her mom goes to all the press tours with her. Whenever she goes somewhere to film, she goes with her. So it's just really, it's really sweet to see that that bond is real.
Oh, that's sweet.
Okay, so now we're going to get into another section that we've basically talked about already. But
yep,
we're going to let Theora rant some more.
I don't have more to rant about it. Okay. Basically how they wrote Ashlyn and Courtney, basically how they wrote all the characters to prop up the conventionally attractive people, I have a problem with. Courtney is the worst, though, because they set her up to be a racial stereotype, and I hate that. All of her conversations with Nene are just about Nene, and she's just the sassy black girl, and that's fucked up in this day and age. Do not do that shit. Make her a person.
I feel like I saw an interview somewhere where she was saying, like, how she liked that she wasn't that. So I don't know if that was after season one or what, because it's definitely stereotypical in season one.
No, it is a racial stereotype in season one for sure. They can be like, well, it's not that. She, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Or it might have been.
That is 100% a stereotype. And Disney just played into it. And, like, had the roles been reversed and Courtney was the main and like Nene was the friend, it wouldn't read that way because that's not a stereotype, but like that is who she is in the very beginning. Courtney becomes an actual person once we get less Nene.
I think it also might have been her or Monique talking about Taylor, of how Taylor was in the science and that she wasn't just a sassy black friend. Like, she was actually smart and stuff.
It also could just be Disney being like, hey, get out there and say this is okay. Because it's fucking Disney. They don't have the best track record for shit. So that's my perception of that. And it pissed me off the most.
I find it interesting that the wikis, they're written by people, but the description that was written for Courtney says in season one, she is mainly only Nene's sassy friend. She is very supportive and is always there for her friends, despite the fact that Nene is rarely there for her.
Correct. She's just a stereotype. She is the sassy black friend. Which is fucked up.
So during the homecoming episode, and this is just like specifics of like examples, both of them have their own issues with, of course, Nene and the Gina and EJ thing. Or is it EJ or is it Ricky? It's Ricky? I don't even know. It's EJ and then it's Ricky. It's all four of them, okay?
Right.
Anyway.
It doesn't matter.
And then Courtney is upset because Tanya Friedman is being a bitch at the costumes and stuff. So Nene listens for like two sentences and then is still back on her own stuff. And then she also thinks about going to school in Denver, and then she casually brings it up to Courtney and she doesn't realize how much that affects Courtney. However, I don't think that Courtney should be like a reason that she stays either, but it's just another example of her, like, just thinking about how things affect her. And she does become, I mean, I know we keep saying that season two becomes more their own, but Nene becomes more supportive in season two. It's just a shame that they had to send her away for her to become supportive. Like, for anybody else to have screen time, they had to send her to a different state.
That's what I mean. They had to physically remove this character for it to get better. And, like, that should tell you something. Like, this character is a problem. Get rid of this character. Or, like, give her less lines. She's the problem.
Yeah, she becomes smaller way in too season much on her. Two. And I think at that time, Olivia Rodrigo was becoming a bigger name.
Olivia Rodrigo, yeah.
So, in a way, I'm cool, kind of glad because it made her go away.
It made the show better. She was annoying as fuck as a character. Like, good, go away.
And then, likewise, Ashlyn is always having to deal with EJ drama because it's EJ. Like, that character was also very, very annoying. And she only got her own storyline when it revolved around a guy, Big Red. But I wasn't upset when she was with Big Red because, I mean, like, he was super sweet to her and they were really cute together.
Yeah, they have a good relationship throughout, which is sweet. Something I will note that I don't like that they did in this show is that they paired up couples based on physical attributes, and it drives me crazy. Like, Big Red and Ashlyn are together. They both have red hair. And it's like, okay, that's weird. Then it's like Nene and Troy are both, and EJ are both like classically beautiful brunettes. And it's like, okay. Then Courtney gets boyfriends who are all men of color. And I'm like, what is this show doing? Because it's like weird. It's like tries to be progressive, but then it does shit like that where on the surface you're like, what are you doing? It reminded me of like when I Love Lucy, like not, this is a way, way back poll, but with, like they put like the classically beautiful people together and then like the rejects together.
Okay, I see
like,
that.
Like Fred and Ethel, like that's what like Big Red and Ashlyn remind me on the surface. They're like, we got these two redhead ginger rejects. Let's put them together because they have that in common.
I know what you're saying for this, but it's just like calling them rejects. It's just so hard, but like,
no, I know what you mean. But like, it's just on the surface, that's how it reads, and it's just weird because they keep doing it in this show, and I'm like, what are you doing? Stop being like low-key racist and like all this shit. It's weird. But that aside, those two are they're probably some two of my favorite characters in the show. I think they're both great on their own, but again, they're just like, these people are, we want to keep them around next season, let's put them together. And it's like, do we need to
also
put them together?
Can they just don't be their actually own people? Get together until the end scene. Like, they don't even get the opportunity to have their scene in the show.
Like, too much happened off screen on this show, and it's annoying.
But like, both times that they have cute things that happen. So basically, at the end of season one, the end credit scene is Big Red doing this incredible tap dance number.
Yeah,
which really go good. Larry. And then Ashlyn coming in with the big flowers that he got.
I don't remember. She comes up with big flowers.
Or season two. Yeah, and then season two, she gives it to him. Okay. And they kiss. They mention it, but like if you didn't actually watch through the credits, you wouldn't have seen it. And then in season two, they have this whole song that they sing, Red Means Love, and it's really cute because Larry actually gets a song. Big Red gets a song, and he doesn't actually get much in this show.
No.
And they sing it through the end credits, and they barely give them any time, and that makes my heart hurt as well.
And that's fair.
And to end this season and episode on a happy-ish note, because I still have some qualms about how they did it, the song that Nene and Ashlyn sing in episode two, Wondering, is like one of my favorites. I just hate that they gave more to Nene in that scene because the actual version is mostly Ashlyn and Nene as backup, except for like one verse, and they give half of it to Nene, and Olivia Rodrigo is billed first on both songs, even though it's basically Ashlyn's song. And it's just, I just like justice for Julia Lester because like she's so talented.
No, for real. And the first time she sings, my thought was like, why isn't this the lead? Like, why is she not the lead in a show that's centering around a musical? Like, why is it? She sings way better than Olivia Rodrigo, in my opinion. I'm like, why is she the lead?
Her voice is beautiful.
It's gorgeous for a musical. And to have Miss Jen, who's supposed to be like a Broadway-minded person, who also, when you hear her sing, clearly sings like a Broadway, like a theater-trained person. Why on earth, after hearing Ashlyn sing, does she not cast Ashlyn as the lead? Because she has a theater singing voice versus Olivia Rodrigo has a pop singing voice. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I was like, because again, it's just, my perception is that Disney's like, we need the conventionally attractive people to be the leads and be in romances with each other to keep people interested because we're progressive at Disney, but we're not that progressive. Like, I'm like...
And that's something we'll get into in season two that I do like, that they switch up a little bit. Not that it's like a huge switch up, but like they do touch on that stereotype of casting like perfect people in the leads. So I'm really excited to keep talking about the show because it does get better. And each season, actually 4, 3, 2, 1, that's my order of liking the show. I'm actually liking season two more now because I've been seeing more stuff. Like, the more you watch it, the more stuff, at least for me, I like. So,
yeah, no, it, like, yeah, if you got through season one and, with us and you're like, what the fuck, why would I keep watching? Honestly, season one is the worst because it was trying to be other stuff to get an audience to make more seasons. Like, it was trying to pull in the people that watched Glee by making it feel like Glee. And then it was trying to pull in the people that loved High School Musical, but then also making it a wholesome Gen Z thing to, like, get all those audiences to watch it. But then it becomes its own show, like, going, like, a little bit in season two, a lot of it in season three, and by the time you get to season four, it is its own thing. And you can tell, and it's so much better because it's not trying to be something else.
Season four is definitely my favorite. Except for one thing now that after doing these notes makes me think, I'm like, oh shit, that's really bad. Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
But okay. Really quick, I just want to give the time real quick because I don't have this in my notes and I wish I did. But justice for Natalie Bagley, okay? Because they have her do confessional type things. She is not a main character. They don't give her
Natalie
much.
Natalie Bagley.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so Natalie is the girl in the first episode that says shit's about to go down.
At the end. Yeah, she's hilarious. She just, like, pops in and does
I love her. She has great lines that I do point out in here.
She reads like a Glee character and is funny, and I liked that. I'm like, yes, more of this. That's what I actually
But they
want.
Did not give her, like, she could have been one of the mains. Like, she had the character there.
She just goes away. I was like, where did she go?
Season two is her last season, and she shows up in one episode in season four, which I'm glad they brought her back, but also that story was weird as well.
Yes, I agree. I was like, what am I watching? No, like,
but if you watch it, just, like, track.
The show just, like, ditches bitches and doesn't tell you why, and you're like, where is everybody?
deserved more.
Too much happens off screen, and they don't explain it. But yeah, she was great. I thought she was, for me, a remnant of Glee that was tracked in a good way, because she was funny and blunt, and I'm like, yes, we need a character like this to break up all this fucking fake cute shit. I make it funny.
I feel like she had the presence of Santana. Like, when she walked into a room, like, you noticed her when she wasn't even a main character.
You know who she was? She wasn't really Santana. She was Tina Cohen Chang when Tina Cohen Chang didn't give a fuck. And I'm like, yes, yes, this energy. I want this.
Okay, yeah. And they also gave Tina nothing, so.
Correct. She is Tina Cohen Chang at her best.
I don't know the actress's name off the top of my head, but you go, girl. I love you.
Love it. Love it. Wish there was more of you. Okay. Is that all for season one, Caitlin?
Yes.
Okay, so shall we rate season one? We should probably rate them season by season.
Okay. All right. We can do that.
Because I think that's fair. All right, so.
That's more fair than yeah.
Yeah, it's more fair. So let's do the Hydrate for Lesbian Jesus scale.
Shit, I didn't think of it by season, Theora. Now I have to think. You do yours first.
Another really scientific scale. Basically, this is, like, our overall thoughts about the show.
Make it more scientific, because I think I might start doing the, like, deduction points of things I don't like. Because I have a lot of trouble with the scale, because, like, my brain is very literal in things, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, this scale, why are we hydrating? Because water, like, queer media, is essential for life. And so, how much would you hydrate for Lesbian Jesus for this show? For season one.
That's important
to know. Season one. I would give it 2 cups of water. Because there are so many things wrong with this, from my opinion. Where it would get cups of water is Nene's parents and her two moms. Mostly, I would give this for Carlos and Seb because I really love them.
Theora's video is just going crazy and it gave it a thumbs down.
It did. No, season one is really bad and I hated it. But.
Oh, okay.
I like the side character. Basically, side characters and the mom's mention. Other than that, this was a struggle to watch because it felt fake because it was trying to be something else and not, it wasn't its own thing. And I didn't appreciate that. So I would never watch season one ever again.
I've watched it many times.
I know, I'm you have. Surprised. You're a strong person.
I have. To be honest, the music gets me through it.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, I'm the type of person to watch everything just for the music. That's why I knew Pitch Perfect word from word, is because I didn't listen to the soundtrack. I just kept replaying the movie. Don't know why I do that, but apparently that's how I can actually get things to... Oh, I know, because if I want to put music on while I'm doing things, I have to have them talking in between, or else I'll just sing the entire time and not get anything done. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I've been going between 3 and 4. And I was leaning towards 4 just because I love Ashlyn, and because I was talking to you a little bit through text, I'm starting to, like, notice Courtney more. I love Courtney, but, like, just the appreciation for her and her character, totally. I have more from just talking about it, in which this is why we have the podcast as well, is because we appreciate things a lot more when we get to talk about it and we open each other's eyes to things. But yeah, it's definitely under 5, so it's a 3. I'll give it a 3.5 then. And that's mainly because of the music I've been listening to nonstop since September. August. Oh, God, it's been a while. My neighbors are definitely excited for us to be done this show. Because I've been, like, making sure I stayed in the show by listening to it all the time, so I wouldn't, like, my passion wouldn't get lost, because sometimes I'll, like, switch topics, so, like, I didn't want to get addicted to another show before we finish this.
Totally.
But yeah, so Ashlyn and Courtney, her Born to Be Brave song, unfortunately, it is just uplifting Nene, but it becomes more important to Courtney later as well, so both of those things. And we got some nostalgic things as well. We had two past characters from High School Musical show up, and overall, it is what it is, and it gets better. Bonus word real quick to write in the comments or in a review. You're going to try to spell this without looking it up. And I did used to know the pronunciation of this, so I'm going to try my best. Gallimaufry. So, in a sentence, it's, Ashlyn is in a gallimaufry of clubs and is extremely busy. There's your word.
All right. Well, good luck with that. And we'll be back later. So, until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the place.
Bye.
Bye.